Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. This is your host, Mary Sauden, naturopath and fertility coach. I help women go from frustrated, overwhelmed, and isolated to calm, confident, and in control of their fertility. I'm passionate about helping women get pregnant and stay pregnant. Each week, I have a real and empowering conversation with everyday women and men struggling with fertility to bring you hope, comfort, and support. This is our story. Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. My guest today is Abby Merrill Feeder. She's a writer, producer, and actress in Los Angeles, known for her role in Experts, Sex Ed, and Brahmin Bulls. She's an artist in residence at the Braid Theater in Santa Monica. She grew up in the mean streets of New York's Upper East Side, graduated from the University of Wisconsin, and studied at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York. Her struggle with infertility led to co-founding InCircle Fertility, a coaching business helping people navigate infertility. Abby and her husband, Isaac, documented their fertility journey in their podcast, Immaculate Conception. Through their private conversations, doctor's visits, and a multitude of moments where all hope appears lost, listeners bear witness to a couple longing to become parents with a passion by turns hilarious and heartbreaking. Welcome to the podcast, Abby.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. It's funny. I don't often hear my bio read aloud. Thank you.
Yes, that's a first. Can you tell us about your fertility journey?
Absolutely. So my husband, Isaac, and I had a 6-year unexplained infertility journey. We started trying shortly after we got married. I was 32 at the time when we started. And, you know, we didn't take it too seriously in the beginning. I think nobody wants to acknowledge that they are diagnosed with something called infertility. I think we would hear other people's stories and we would say, oh my gosh, thank God that's not going to be us. Thank God that's not going to be us, until it was. And once we started getting medical treatment, which was about 3 years into the journey, we weren't getting much farther along in terms of answers. We had our egg quality wasn't an issue. Our egg quantity wasn't an issue. The sperm was not an issue, which in some ways, as we know, can be some of the most frustrating pieces of diagnosis because there's nothing you can do to fix it or change it or treat it.
Right.
And when I say we tried everything, I mean, we tried everything. We did all sorts of Eastern medicine in addition to our Western medicine, and I believe wholeheartedly in, you know, acupuncture, Reiki, all sorts of healing, tapping. I mean, we did everything. And it just got to a point where we did 4 IUIs, 4 retrievals, 8 transfers. And our doctor was like, you know, it's time to start. If you want to still do this, I had embryos left. It's time to start talking to a surrogate. And on our way to finding a surrogate, we did one more transfer where I was like, you know, let's just tweak this little thing or that little thing just so that I know I did it all. And, you know, we know that it's not going to work and then we'll move on and we'll find our surrogate. But I don't want to find a surrogate until I know these little things that could be tweaked might do it. And my doctor said, you know, if you want to do it again, I will. But I kind of think you're crazy for expecting anything different. And lo and behold, I birthed twins from that cycle. So I can't point to any one of these little things we tweaked that might have done it. I can't tell you why it worked that time and didn't work the many, many other times, but I was given a blessing and a miracle, and I am now on the other side of my journey. So,
wow. Let's unpack. That's amazing. Let's unpack your journey a little bit, because that seemed like a lot of things that you went through.
So
you went through 4 IUIs before going to IVF.
And to anyone at this point, I feel very strongly that unless there's some amazing reason you're doing IUI after IUI, like, If it's a known sperm issue, a known timing issue, if IUIs are covered by insurance, if there's just some reason, great. But otherwise, I still wish I would have moved on from IUIs a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's good advice, actually, to just go straight to IVF, the IUI. That's
important. Yeah. I think nobody wants to acknowledge that they might need IVF. Who does? Who wants to acknowledge it emotionally and physically and, you know, financially in the States? But it was money putting, even though IUI is so much less expensive, it's money we could have been putting into our IVF treatment. So,
right. Exactly. You know. And IVF, you know, it seems like a big step. Lots more medication, more doctor visits.
Yes.
So how many IVF cycles did you go through?
So I did, you know, it depends on how you count. Some people say we did 8 transfers and 4 retrievals in total. So
4 retrievals. That, oh my gosh.
Yes. When we did one, you know, I think something we don't expect, it's like once you think you're going to IVF, you kind of assume you're going to get a baby out of the process. You
right,
don't
exactly.
realize that maybe it won't work. It's like, oh, all right, we're finally going to do IVF and we're finally going to get our baby. So when it didn't take the first time, and I had a doctor who was wonderful and very kind of aggressive. And so he put 2 tested embryos in the first time. And I was like, okay, that means we're going to have twins. Mm-hmm. And then it neither one took. So I know. And so I was like, oh, I didn't even think that that was an option. I just assumed this was going to work. And that is when things just got even crazier than they had been.
Yes. Tell us more. What happened?
At that point, it just never occurred to me that it might not work. And so we had gotten a lovely amount of embryos and we had gotten them tested and a significant amount, you know, came back normal. And so I just assumed this was everything and we were done. And when it didn't work the first time, we said, okay, well, this was just a fluke. And sometimes the first time it doesn't work, let's try again. And then it didn't work again.
Oh, okay.
And so at that point, I still had 2 embryos left. And I figured something else was going on. I need to figure this out before we put the last 2 embryos in. Mm-hmm. And then actually a family friend who I have conveniently, who is a fertility doctor, said, look, you could put those 2 embryos in. But, you know, at that time, I think I was 37. And what if they take and then only one of them takes and then you have no embryos left and then you maybe want to have another kid. And by the time you start over again, you might be 39 or 40 or 41 and who knows what's going to happen. And he just presented it in a way where it made the most sense to do another retrieval, which again, my mind was like completely blown. It never occurred to me that I would do another retrieval.
Right.
I waited several months and you know, I did a few more, I got my egg quality in check. Again, that wasn't an issue, but it was just, or it wasn't at least a diagnosed issue, but it just made me feel a little bit more in control of the process.
Right.
And we did another retrieval. And at that time, we actually put 2 embryos in untested because from the testing that we had done, there was nothing glaring that was a major issue. And so my doctor said, you know, you could save $6,000, put 2 in. Chances are at least one of them will take. It doesn't seem like you have to put tested ones in. And let's just see what happens. And so we did. And I actually got pregnant from that cycle.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, maybe it was the testing. Maybe I don't know what it was. And lo and behold, at about 7.5 weeks, it was not going to be a viable pregnancy.
Oh.
So. I miscarried and I got the, well, at least we know you can get pregnant, which really only a doctor should say that to you. You can't have somebody else say that to you. But at that point I thought, great, well, now I have these tested embryos left. So if I just put the tested ones in, which we know are viable, into my body, which we now know can get pregnant, that should work. And so we did that combination and it did not take.
Oh.
So at that point, we had done 4 transfers, 2 retrievals, and I just needed a mental health break, as I'm sure you can understand.
Yes.
And I did. I took a mental health break. I had untested embryos left, and I had gotten so many second opinions, and I loved my doctor, and I felt, and really all the opinions we went to were like, you're in such good hands. He's such a wonderful doctor. But I took a little break, and I went to somebody that was recommended to me, and a female doctor, and she was wonderful. Her name's Dr. Wambach. Mm-hmm. And I just went, I said, look, I just need another second opinion. I have these embryos left. They're not tested. I don't know if I should test them. Here's what's going on. Anyway, I went in and I told her my whole story, and there was just something about her energy. I don't know. She'd been through her own journey, mm-hmm. and I didn't think I needed a female doctor specifically, but then when I was sitting in front of one, it just, something felt so comforting about it to me. Mm-hmm. And so I decided with love to leave my first doctor, and he was totally supportive. Really incredible. I mean, he helped me transfer my embryos from one clinic to another. He lent me the mm-hmm. nitrogen tanks to use. Like, he couldn't have been more supportive. Yeah. I mean, he was like, look, we're all in the business of wanting to get you pregnant. So if it's mm-hmm. with her, then great. And which I really respect and don't hear about often.
Yeah.
So yeah, I switched doctors, and I thought maybe this was it. I'd have new energy. And mm-hmm. anyway, so she transferred me with my older embryos, and they didn't take. And so we did a third retrieval.
Gosh.
I know. I mean, the saga goes on and on. But ultimately, mm-hmm. we decided to do one last retrieval and do a fresh cycle, because I actually got pregnant a second time, and then had, unclear whether it was actually ectopic or if it was just a pregnancy of unknown origin. Hmm. But another unviable pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of tweaked a few more things until I finally made it happen. I did an autoimmune protocol. I had intralipid injections. I mm-hmm. mean, like I said, you name it, we did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you emotionally get through all of that?
I'm not sure I've still processed it all. You know, so my husband and I started this podcast called Maculate Conception, mm-hmm. which is now exclusively on Audible. Mm-hmm. And it, at the time, we really were carrying a lot of emotional pain and scarring and grief, and we did not know where to put it. Mm-hmm. And the recorder sort of became our therapist. We were able to just, you know, we didn't know if anything was ever going to happen. We didn't know even that we were going to make it into a podcast. Somebody had just said, you know, you guys should start recording. As you know, we're both in the entertainment business. And I kept thinking, we have to write something about this. We have to write something about this. Mm-hmm. We were just exhausted and didn't want to write. We just wanted to talk it out. And so we grabbed a recorder and we were like, let's just start recording and see what happens. And so that became very cathartic for us. It almost became like, you know, we'd have these like therapy sessions while recording, which ultimately, mm-hmm. if you listen to our podcast, you do hear our fights and our discussions and our doctor's appointments. I mean, all of it. So mm-hmm. that was a huge help for us in terms of where to process our emotional weight.
Yes, that's a very positive outlet for
yes.
all the stress and emotion.
Yes. Yes.
Were you open with your friends and family about your fertility journey?
So in the beginning, no, not because I didn't want to be open. If you know me, you know I'm an open book and I will talk mm-hmm. about anything, but it was more because we still wanted the element of surprise. Like, we still wanted to be able to say, guess what? We're pregnant.
Yes.
But, you know, after so many more years of marriage was happening and so many more childless years, and people knew we wanted to have children. It's not like they said, you know, wondered, oh, well, maybe they don't want kids. I mean, we had talked very openly around our marriage about wanting to have children. And so eventually we started to have to tell people, my parents wanted to take a vacation at some point. And we, at that point, were like, well, we're hoping that we're going to be going through fertility treatment, so we're not going to be able to take that vacation. And just saying it to them once just made mm-hmm. us feel so much relief that we just started talking much more openly about it. And this is something I deal with all the time because I'm still, you know, working in the fertility world now, but mm-hmm. parents and your loved ones, in fact, sometimes the people closest to you just have no idea how to deal with it or how to mm-hmm. help. And so they would say all the wrong things or they wouldn't say anything, which sometimes made it worse. Mm-hmm. And so in our talking about it, we were able to guide our friends and family of in terms of how they should be helping us deal with it.
Yes. So they were supportive in the end.
Very supportive. I mean, look, there are friendships, I would say, that maybe fell to the wayside because I didn't feel supported or taken care of. Mm-hmm. And that's okay with me. I believe strongly in setting boundaries and sometimes or having certain expectations. And if those expectations aren't met, it's okay for a relationship to change or a friendship to become less close. I think that that's forcing it is worse than letting it go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a very adult and healthy way of handling things. Setting the boundaries.
Yes.
How did you handle the disappointment of like failed transfers or going through a miscarriage? It must have been tough.
It was terrible. My husband and I have a favorite restaurant in LA. And I think after the first transfer failed, I had been doing like a no gluten, no dairy, no sugar, no alcohol. And then when the transfer failed, I was like, let's go to dinner. And so I went all the, you know, drink all the wine. And so we went to this one restaurant, which is one of our favorite restaurants still. And we just kind of drank and ate our sorrows away. And I gave myself kind of a pity party timeline. Like you can grieve about, I mean, obviously I believe in taking all the time to grieve that you need, but I was like, you know, give yourself the week to cry about this and then let's figure out our next steps. And so I gave myself the time that I needed. And then I would determine, do I still want to keep going? Do I want to take a break? Do I want to stop altogether? And that would sort of determine what our next steps were.
That's great. How did it affect your relationship with your husband? Like going through infertility?
I think some of the biggest fights we ever had were because of our infertility. And at the same time, and I can get more into that, but at the same time, where infertility sends you on one of two paths, either you become much closer or you become much more far apart. And we're very lucky that we ended up on the closer path. But that said, it wasn't without some really tough fights. Things like I had a very conservative doctor, my first one, who did not allow air travel after transfer. And, you know, my husband would want to go visit certain friends or family. And I would be like, well, that's during a period where I can't travel. And he would say, like, well, I'll just go. And I'd be like, so you're going to leave me to miscarry, potentially, you know, the dreaded 2 week wait by myself, you know, and he wouldn't go, or sometimes he would. But it was, you know, every sense of everything was heightened because of the drugs and that I was on and the hormones and all of the things that we do as women, right? We put our bodies through and they're like, oh, I'm just going to pick up and take a vacation while you're doing this. And it's like, no, you're not, you know? But my husband and I are both extremely like passionate on all sides. And so when we fight passionately too. And I don't always think that that's the worst. I think sometimes it's better to get it out for the sake of the relationship. And so, you know, we would get out the horrible fights, and we definitely had been going to therapy, which if you have access to it, I highly recommend on all counts. And so we made it through, and we made it through stronger, but there were definitely some questionable periods there.
Yes, that's for sure. But you guys made it work. You worked on the relationship.
We did. We did.
How did your fertility journey change you?
Well, on a very pragmatic level, it changed my life's work because I now do fertility coaching, and I'm 100% certain that I was meant to go through it to be able to help other people.
Right.
And, you know, I think resilience is something nobody strives for, but we find out we have it in these moments of despair. Nobody ever says like, because it usually means you've had to go through hell to get there. So I didn't seek out being a resilient person, but I think it's made me realize how resilient I am. And that is such a part of my self-awareness now. I feel like I can tackle anything. I've always been a very empathetic person, especially like as an actress. I try very hard to empathize with a character, fictional or not. But the amount of empathy I carry for people is just even greater because you genuinely don't know what somebody's going through on a daily basis.
Right. Yes. You know? I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you mentioned exactly, like, people just assume things are great
exactly
based on social media and it looks perfect, but in reality
exactly
might not. Yeah,
right.
And I know you mentioned fertility coaching. How does fertility coaching help with other women out there struggling with infertility?
Oh my gosh, I always say I strive to be the coach I wish I had. Mm-hmm. There are so many ways. I think, like, social media can be really great, especially now that people are talking so much more openly about their mm-hmm. journeys. But sometimes it can be really overwhelming. And we all know the comparison aspect on social media is dangerous. So mm-hmm. I think just helping our clients focus on, you know, everybody's different. And I mean, everybody and everybody. So yeah. A lot of times, especially at larger clinics, we find our clients are given like a one-size-fits-all approach, and sometimes that's not the best approach. And so we really encourage them to know and understand their own journeys and advocate for their journeys to be acknowledged at their clinic. That's a really important one. Or, like, for example, because I'm not a therapist, I can share a lot more in terms of opinions and experiences, whereas therapists have, you know, different confidentiality boundaries.
Right.
So I could say to our client, you know, I can say to a client, like, stop wasting your time and money with more IUIs, if that is what the case is. That's just like another example.
Right.
Or, you know, why is your doctor putting you on this medication when, you know, last round you had OHSS and you were hyperstimulated? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like another set of eyes and on the actual treatment. And at the end of the day, it's really just hand-holding and heart-holding.
Yes.
People, you know, you have your mom, maybe. You have your best friend, maybe. You have your sister, maybe. You have your partner, maybe. But there's just something different about a coach that's gone through it, who genuinely understands, because I've been there, what it feels like, you know?
You were in the trenches.
I was in the trenches, and that's the thing. It takes empathy is one thing, but actually having gone through it is something else. Mm-hmm. Or there are doctors, or, you know, acupuncturists. There's all kinds of, I always joke, you know, they joke about the village it takes to raise a baby, but what about the village it takes to make a baby?
Exactly.
And and like, that village can be vast and wonderful, but there's also things you may not need. And so we really try to help our clients sort of save money by not doing all the things, but spending their money on the most efficient things, all while supporting the emotional side of the journey as well.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. What do you offer in your fertility coaching business?
So it's one-on-one, but it's really two-on-one, because my business partner, Sophie, and I work together. And it's kind of one of the things that makes us a little different about our fertility coaching practice versus some others, because you do get both of us, and we've both been through it, but very differently. So she has a story of secondary infertility, and mine was primary, and, you know, we just had very different miscarriage experiences. And so we both bring a different aspect of the trenches to the experience. And so our signature package is a 4-month engagement, where we go through however many cycles as are needed in the 4 months. So we help you prepare for your doctor's appointments. We figure out, you know, are you at the best clinic for you? Are you at the best doctor for you? Because if you're going to be spending so much money and time at this clinic with this doctor, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to make sure that you're a fit. It's just like any match, right? But this is somebody literally playing with life. So, you know, you always want to make sure you're with a great practitioner, and just getting all the support you need, keeping the boundaries you need to keep, explaining to your partner what your expectations are. We really try to navigate the physical, but also the emotional piece of the pie.
Perfect. What are the top things that you do consistently for your own health?
Oh my gosh. It's a great question. I mean, I have toddler twins now, so those my self-care rituals changed significantly, but I'm very lucky that my mother's not like a therapist, but also has always been very good at taking care of herself. And I think she passed that on to me. So I'm just lucky that I have like a partner that lets me take the time I need if I'm about to have a meltdown. Mm-hmm. I do meditate. I'm a terrible meditator. I the minute I start and I'm like, oh, what should I have for lunch? What color should I, you know? But I still do it every single day just for the practice of doing it. And it still becomes part of my ritual. Mm-hmm. And I know this is something so cliche, but I do take a bath every day or every night.
Nice.
And I do it with Epsom salt.
Mm-hmm.
And Epsom salts always were just like a thing I used to throw in the bath. But as part of my fertility journey, they became such a more ritualized item for me because I feel like we talk about a salt cure, like either crying, an ocean, Epsom salt, right? Like salt, I just feel is so healing. And so an Epsom salt bath every single day is part of my life. And it sort of gives me pause to think. Back when I was in my early stages of pregnancy and I wasn't able to take a bath, that was one of the hardest things for me. Because especially during my process, you know, if I was going through an egg retrieval, I couldn't take a terribly hot bath, but I would still dunk in water in some way, shape, or form and find it really healing.
That sounds so nice.
I know, right?
I'm like, very relaxing.
One right now.
Exactly. What is your message to women out there struggling with infertility?
Honestly, it's follow your heart. My business partner, Sophie, and I don't believe in the never give up method. We don't look at stopping treatment as giving up. We just feel that you have to follow your gut and your heart and know what's right in the moment in terms of what to pursue. And only you know that. And I think that's really hard. It's really hard, especially when you're undergoing treatment and you can't necessarily even listen to your gut because you feel like in those moments, we like to try to help our clients too. But it really is trust your gut. I knew when it was time to take a break and that I just couldn't go on anymore for a little while. And I also knew forever that I was meant to have biological children. And so I just had to keep honoring that. And obviously, I'm glad that I did. And I know that's not the luxury that every person has. But I wouldn't have had the strength to keep going if I didn't know in my gut I had to just follow through on it.
Beautiful. How can people reach you?
Please find me on Instagram the best way. Abs of Style is my Instagram, or my coaching practice is In Circle Fertility. And if you find me on either one, I am there probably what one might consider too often, but I do love connecting with people that way. And also my podcast is on Audible and we made it for people going through the actual journey. So I always recommend it to people going through it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Adam, for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for doing this.
No worries. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for continuing to advocate for all infertility warriors out there.
My absolute p�pleasure.
How awesome was that? If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe, and I would love to receive a review from you. And let's keep this conversation going. What is your fertility journey like? How are you choosing to be compassionate with yourself? Subscribe to the Fertility Stories podcast. I've got a new episode coming your way next week, and until then, talk soon.